Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. This is our fourth podcast, and we're thrilled to now have almost a full month of shows under our utility belt. Today, we're going to talk about box office numbers, what stands out to our distinguished panel of guests, also talk about the best and worst things we saw this week. As usual, we'll have our general industry talk about movie announcements, casting rumors, and any stories related to the movie biz that we want to chat about. And then, of course, we'll talk about what you need to be on the lookout for this week in television and movies. It's an exciting time, especially in television, where we've got all sorts of premieres coming up. And now I will introduce the panel members joining us the same way I did last week, in case you don't remember, or if you weren't here. Each panel member is going to be asked a totally random entertainment question. They have no knowledge of the question that they're going to be asked, but they have to answer the question. And then we all get the chance to either agree with them or make fun of them. So first, we're going to say hello to Mr. Black, who was probably our best question answerer last week. How you doing, Mr. Black?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm excellent. And where are you joining us from?
Hawthorne, California.
Hawthorne, California. Awesome. Mr. Black, should there be an Ocean's 14, and why?
Ooh, that's actually somewhat of a good question. I liked all three movies, to be honest, and I thought they got progressively more thought out, more imaginative.
I liked them, too. They were pretty good.
Yeah, but I think an Ocean's 14, I mean, although I'm sure it'd be a great movie, I think it's just kind of unnecessary. Because I think we've pretty much done all they can, so I can't really answer that, to be honest.
I think actors and director Soderbergh also said that 13 was going to be their last one anyway, didn't they?
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I have no knowledge of that. I'm one of those people now that I'm sucked in. I mean, you put George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, and the whole gang. You put them on the screen. I'm gonna go watch it. So I mean,
I'm gonna go watch it too. I agree. If they made it, I'll go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved all three movies, to be honest. And 13 was one of my favorites it's probably my favorite one out of the three. So.
Well, I liked that they were back in Vegas in the 13th one, and kind of how they were kind of coming to. The aid of one of their group. What's-his-face was getting like bilked out of the business. And I like the fact that they brought in a big name as the villain. They brought in Al Pacino. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
So I could see them doing a 14, maybe doing something where, you know, something that appeals to audiences again, where maybe this time they're going to be stealing from some large multi-glomerate corporation or something.
It's going to take place in Laughlin, Nevada, buddy.
Excellent. Excellent.
You know, just put them up against Al-Qaeda. I want to see how they do against Al-Qaeda.
No, it's going to involve the Hell's Angels biker gang in Laughlin, Nevada. That's it.
That could
That's
work.
The story.
Actually, that'd be interesting.
Put them in Dubai.
And the new casinos out there, yeah, that might be cool.
Like I said, I'll see it no matter what. You put those guys in it, I'll go see it. They could be robbing old ladies outside of the 7-Eleven, and I'm in. Also, want to welcome the dude. The dude is here. How are you, dude?
The dude is good. How's everyone doing tonight?
Good.
Great.
I'm great. Dude, I got a question for you. If Christian Bale went the way of Heath Ledger and suddenly met his demise, who should take his place as Batman?
You know, I am going to say Leonardo DiCaprio for no other reason than I think he's a stud.
What? That's a great answer. That's a great answer. I love it.
I think Leonardo DiCaprio can do anything, personally.
What? I have to completely disagree with you on that.
Okay, no, that's fine. Completely disagree.
He's a great actor. He's a great actor, don't get me wrong. I just don't know if he could pull off the Batman. I mean, there was rumors that he's going to play Captain America. It might be interesting to see, I don't think he could pull it off, but that's just me. Whatever.
I could see him.
Okay, and a lot of other people, apparently, because when that news broke, a lot of people seemed to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. Picture Leonardo DiCaprio as Bruce Wayne. That's the big one for me.
Okay, there you go. Batman,
you don't even see Christian Bale. When Batman's on the screen, it's Batman on the screen. I mean, they can do wonderful things just in the movie industry. For me, I mean, picture him as Bruce Wayne. He's perfect for it.
Here's my thing.
Christian Bale's perfect for it, but he could do it.
I have to say, if Nolan ever decided to do Robin, I could see DiCaprio doing Robin. I cannot see him. I cannot see him doing Bruce Wayne or Batman.
I don't know. Man.
I can't. I don't want. I wouldn't even want to see him as Robin.
DiCaprio is past the point where he needs to be anybody's sidekick. I think Leonardo DiCaprio
as Bruce Wayne, Batman, Tobey Maguire, Robin.
I'd watch that. That'd be funny.
But here's the thing. I think that it's really cool how Hollywood now is at least trying to, instead of picking out actors that look and just should be superheroes, these big, high-powered, action-looking guys, they're now picking just really good actors and thinking, look, good actors can pull it off. And I thought Robert Downey Jr. was excellent as Iron Man, and even though I'm not crazy about Christian Bale, he does a wonderful job as Bruce Wayne in Batman. And to me, I never would have thought about it, but from the moment you said Leonardo DiCaprio, that I would be very intrigued to see him do that, because I think he could.
I guess I'm in the minority then, because I cannot see that.
Mr. Black, your opinions are always well respected in this panel. Now, I'd like to introduce Mazer. How are you doing tonight, Mazer?
Doing good.
Good, good. And where are you joining us from?
Hollywood.
Hollywood, nice. Oh, did I ask the dude where he was joining us from?
I'm from Utah, so it didn't really matter anyways.
Nice. Utah. It's that state between Wyoming and Nevada. I've seen pictures. Okay. Mazer, name a non-superhero movie that you would most like to see get a sequel.
You've Got Mail. How about that one? You've Got Mail. I'll answer for you if you're going to take that
one. I got to say, that's a tough question, dude.
Yeah, that's really tough.
I mean, AMH.
Thank you. No one can use the term dude tonight unless they're talking to the dude.
Yeah, dude is monopolized on this podcast. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a superhero movie, but I want to see them continue the Chronicles of Riddick. I just want to see what happens there.
I think they are.
They are? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should pick something else.
Well, Vin Diesel's talking heavily about doing 2 and 3. Talking about filming them at the same time like they did with Lord of the Rings. So, whether it happens or not, I don't know, because the Chronicles of Riddick did not make that much money in the box office anyway. So who knows what the studios will do.
Okay, I'll throw something out completely wild. There's a movie, when I watched the end of it, I wanted to watch like 3 more hours of it, and it was Traffic. If they made a sequel to Traffic, I'd love to see that.
They did a TV show, which is terrible, actually. But I mean, I'd like to see Titanic Part 2, to be honest with you.
Thanks, Minkman. I didn't ask myself the question, but you know, I think a lot about this. I would really like to see another Italian Job sequel. I thought that he had a nice little core group of guys. Are they really?
It's called the Brazilian Job.
Excellent. And where does that take place?
Brazil.
I'm kidding. Okay.
No, we're not going to take.
Appreciate it.
Brazil, Texas.
Nice. So Mazer goes with Traffic. All right, Dr. Venkman, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Excellent.
And where are you joining us from?
Burbank, California.
It is the capital of California. Dr. Venkman, this is a tough one. What is the best movie trailer you have ever seen?
Wow, the best movie trailer I've ever seen. Holy crap. Huh. You know...
You've Got Mail? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's going to be our filler for
tonight. To be honest...
Exactly. Whenever there's too much silence. Go ahead.
Off the top of my head... When I think about that, the first movie that popped into my head was the first Lord of the Rings, because I remember when I first saw that movie trailer, I was in awe. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It looked amazing. I couldn't believe the movie was being made. It ran emotions through me, like how much I love film and that this is getting made, and I mean, I think I even got choked up maybe while watching the trailer. No joke. I don't know.
Hey, well, as much as I appreciate your sensitive side, Venkman. Lord of the Rings.
Frodo.
Exactly.
Frodo.
No, I remember that. It was exciting because you got to see a little bit of each film.
I've never been so excited about a movie trailer before in my life when I saw that. Although, I will say that when I saw the Watchmen trailer, I literally watched that probably maybe 50 times in one day. It looked so amazing. I could just watch it over and over again too. So, that got me really excited as well.
That's a lot of trailer watching.
I'm gonna vote for Tron 2.
It wasn't really a trailer, though. As awesome as it wasn't a trailer. That was a film clip to get us excited. But I guess that's what a trailer is, right? Okay, it was a trailer.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Minkman. Anybody else have a trailer they want to throw in there? Thought the best ever?
I got an old school one for you.
Go for it.
I really like... I don't know if you guys remember this, but... About 6 months before Independence Day came out, they would do this teaser where all you saw was the ships coming through the atmosphere, and you just saw crowds of people looking at the ships coming in, and that's all you saw for these teaser trailers.
Just the reactions. I remember that. That's excellent.
But what I loved about it is that they did this like 6 months before anybody even heard of this movie, and they didn't even say what the movie was about. That's all they showed, and then they would flash Independence Day, but you didn't know. But you figured that's when it's coming out. You know, you didn't kind of know that was what the movie was going to be called. I just remember that, and I thought that was just a great idea for a trailer.
Yeah, I remember that. Can I change my answer?
No, you lose. I'll tell you what, though. since he brought that up, I thought of another teaser. Because sometimes teasers are much more intriguing than trailers.
Yeah.
And I remember in... golly, I guess it was in 2001, somewhere around that time, you saw the whole trailer of these villains come in and they're robbing a bank. And, I mean, it's very, you know, much centered around what the bank robbery, and it was happening really fast. And they come pouring out, and then, you know, they take off in this helicopter. That was their getaway. And all of a sudden, in the helicopter, they just kind of stopped. They were frozen. Then they looked out, and it appeared that they were just suspended in midair. And then all of a sudden, the camera panned out from the helicopter, and the helicopter was actually stuck in a giant spider web. And of course, the reason that this trailer or teaser didn't play very long was because the web was held up between the two buildings of the World Trade Center. And this happened, you know, just. Yeah. Before 9/11, but I don't know if you guys ever saw that, and I still think you can get it on the internet. You can still find it, but I just thought, what a cool way to introduce Spider-Man, because if I remember correctly, I don't think they even showed Spider-Man in that teaser. Now, I could be completely wrong, and they might have, but that's not what I remember about it, so I thought that was very cool. Excellent point there with the Independence Day. Well, I guess we should move on. So that's everybody. Mr. Black, the Dude, Mazer, Dr. Venkman, and myself, EMH. And we're thrilled to be here with you tonight. Let's get started talking about the top five movies of the week at the box office. It was a good weekend for the Coen brothers. Burn After Reading pulls in $19 million at the box office. Yes. And here's my question to you guys. Is this just... because the Coen brothers are now that good and they're coming off the big success of No Country for Old Men, which won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture? Or does this have more to do with the fact that this is George Clooney and Brad Pitt on the same screen, same time, and that's going to bring in big money?
I'm going to put mine in. I think, the Coen brothers, they are very well loved, but I think the big success with this was the advertising campaign. I mean, who could have seen a trailer for Burn After Reading or a commercial for Burn After Reading and not wanted to see this film, especially with, I mean, Brad Pitt, George Clooney, and the characters that they were playing in this. It looked great. And I mean, to me, that was the success. And it was well worth it. It was awesome.
I think everything played a part in it. The directors, the actors, the marketing. I just think it was very it was a great execution on all ends. They're not going to lose on this movie. They have everything going for it. I loved it. I thought the movie was great. The only thing is I'm afraid there are going to be some people that see it that just aren't going to get it.
But doesn't that always happen with a Coen brother movie? I mean,
It does. But it's almost like this was kind of almost targeted to... They tried targeting it to a younger audience as well, it seemed like. And I don't know how a younger audience that aren't movie buffs would take some of the subject matter from the movie. I don't know.
You know, all I saw was the trailer. I haven't seen the movie yet, but when I saw the trailer, not even on the big screen, I just saw it on the small screen, and I was laughing out loud. I thought it was so funny. And as usual with the Coen brothers, you get a little piece of the plot, but you don't always get, you know, what the full plot is, which again is rare in Hollywood. You get so much of the movie in the trailer nowadays. So who all on the panel saw the movie, and how good was it?
Oh, I saw it. It was awesome. And actually, I wanted to kind of ask what everyone thought of the ending. I'm not going to give anything away, but I mean, it did have one of these endings that the Coen brothers are kind of, you know, getting into the habit of doing, where it just kind of ends, and it's very unexpected. I just wanted to know what everyone thought about
it. I thought
that
the ending was brilliant. I love the ending of this movie. It's one of my favorite endings of the year. I loved how it ended.
It was great. Did you? I don't know about you guys, but me, literally, when the movie ended, the credits rolled, I sat in my seat and I felt like I couldn't get up because it was going to start going again or something. I mean, I couldn't. I had to sit there and think about what just happened, which, I mean, we've all seen No Country for Old Men. It was kind of the same deal. And at first, I didn't know, when I saw No Country for Old Men, it kind of pissed me off because I didn't see it on the big screen. I saw it, I had to rent it, and kind of pissed me off because I saw it when I was tired, you know, I was sleepy, and I had to go back and watch the last half hour or so again until I, you know, really got it, and then I really liked it. It was kind of the same thing with this, but, you know, I like it just that much more because it forces you to actually think about the film and not just have it, you know, kind of subliminally go into your mind and make you stupid or whatever.
Well, and there is a lot to think about the film. I mean, the Coen brothers are trying to say something about society in it.
You know what it reminded me
and
of?
It's like, what?
Who else loves The Sopranos? I'm a huge Sopranos fan.
Yeah.
No. Oh, sure,
yeah.
Sure.
The series finale to The Sopranos was the same way. It just kind of leaved you like, what just happened? And it forced you to go back through season 6 and even earlier and kind of deduce for yourself what exactly happened. And that's exactly what the filmmakers were going for. They want you to draw your own conclusions. They want that story to go on in your own mind. And for that alone, it makes it just that much greater for me.
Although I will say that they wrapped up the story a little bit more than how they wrapped up No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
There was a little bit more of a wrap-up. The average audience could probably let it go and move on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, we everybody on the panel seems to like the Coen brothers, and we appreciate their kind of, I don't know if it's the right word, but offbeat brand of humor. So what are the best Coen brothers movies that you can think of?
Big Lebowski is one of my
favorites.
Big
Lebowski.
Well, sure, dude. No question.
Can't go wrong with the Big Lebowski.
I'm a huge fan of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I love that movie.
Oh, yeah,
too.
That's right.
That movie was awesome. Honestly, I don't think I've seen a Coen Brothers movie that I haven't really liked. I mean, I haven't not liked.
Did you like The Lady Killers with Tom Hanks?
I did. I did
too, but I mean, I was surprised at that movie.
I like the characters. It was more of the character development in this than it was the story for me. But it was how the characters reacted with each other through the story that I found really interesting, and that's what I liked about it.
Are we all Fargo fans? Do we like Fargo?
Yes,
we love Fargo. Eh?
See, you mentioned how you had to go back and watch No Country for Old Men multiple times, or, you know, again before you really felt like it clicked with you and you liked it. I was that way with Fargo, but it took me more like about 9 or 10 years. Because when I first saw that movie, I hated it so much. And I could not understand why so many people loved it. And then, of course, I went back and I watched it a couple of times and just did not get it. And then, I don't know, one night it just kind of clicked and I just started laughing pretty hard at Fargo. Raising Arizona is kind of the same way, although that only took me like once or twice. But to this day, the Big Lebowski is one of the absolute funniest movies that I've ever seen. I think they do some really
interested.
Good stuff.
I'm interested to see what you think when you see Burn After Reading, because I liked it almost as much as I like The Big Lebowski. And it did in a different way, but I don't know. I just really liked it. It was just a really smart film.
The characters were great, too.
Yeah, yes. I can't wait to see Burned After Reading. That looks like a pretty good movie.
Brad Pitt was so funny in that movie. Playing an airhead is just awesome.
I think Brad Pitt suffers. I think he suffers from that Leonardo DiCaprio syndrome, where if you're a good-looking guy and you're in the magazines and the ladies love you, then you do become more of a tabloid or you know, a celebrity or whatever, and people forget Brad Pitt is a good actor.
Yeah,
I mean he's solid. Okay, well, that was the biggest movie of the week. And by the way, if you're interested, the Coen Brothers, Burn After Reading, $19 million. That was their biggest opening weekend ever. Before that, it was The Lady Killers with Tom Hanks.
Wow.
And $12.6 million. And then right behind that, George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones, $12.5 million for Intolerable Cruelty, which I thought, again, was another funny movie. Most recently, the Coen Brothers had major success with No Country for Old Men, as it did, as we mentioned, win Best Picture Oscar this year, and ended up, you know, obviously off the success of that, making $75 million. Also in the top five this weekend, Tyler Perry's The Family That Prays, $18 million. Let me just tell you, Tyler Perry, this guy, he is apparently awesome. But so far, for me personally, maybe I'm just not his audience, but I've never seen anything that a Tyler Perry has written or produced that's made me laugh one time. Not one word. But everything he does is gold, apparently. So did anybody see this movie, or have you ever liked anything he's ever done?
I'm about right there with you on Tyler Perry. I guess I'm not his demographic, because I just don't get it.
I'm not a big fan of the Tyler Perry either. I tried watching one of his movies once, and it didn't click with me.
Is it humor too inside, or?
I just didn't think it was funny.
Nah. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I've my mother-in-law, and she's like in her late 50s, early 60s, and I catch her watching his TV show on TBS. What is it? What's the show? The comedy show.
House of Pain or something like that?
House of Pain. I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah, I don't get that, but she's like, well, it's not that good, but it makes me laugh. So I'm like, okay. I even caught my wife one time watching it, and I said, you need to turn that. She said, okay.
He has an exclusive deal with Lionsgate, and those guys treat him like he's a god, almost.
Well, I mean, again, look at this movie. Tyler Perry's The Family That Prays, and maybe this is my own ignorance, but I can't tell you one person that's in it. I can't give you one plot point of this film. This movie, opening on only 2,070 screens, this movie made $18 million in opening weekend. He's got a following that is humongous. And a few years back, when I worked at Blockbuster Video, the people would come in and his Medea's, you know, the little female old lady character that he plays, the Medea's class reunion and Medea's family reunion or whatever, they would just fly off the shelves. People absolutely loved him. So I guess hats off to him, but I'm not watching his stuff. It doesn't make me laugh.
Yeah.
The number three movie of the weekend, Righteous Kill. I've been waiting a long time for this. De Niro and Pacino on the screen together for the first time since Heat. This movie makes $16.5 million opening weekend. Did anybody see Righteous Kill?
Nope.
No. I do want to catch it, though.
Yeah, I want to catch it.
See, that's the problem. Everybody here wants to see it, but nobody did see it this weekend. So, I don't know. Apparently, there's a production budget of $60 million on this. If it opens up 16.5, most likely it's not going to hit $60 million while it's out at theaters, which is sad to say. But, I'm intrigued. So, I guess we'll kind of suspend opinions on that until somebody in the group actually sees it. Number four this weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's right. Two of the screen legends of our time. And they're in the same movie, same time, and we don't go see it.
Women. Can't tell you about it.
Sorry, guys. Exactly. It's not like we don't want to see it. It's just... For me,
let's talk about Watchmen again, guys.
Can we please talk about The Dark Knight one more time?
Let's talk about Iron Man. Who saw Dark Knight again?
That was great.
Wow. Oh,
man. The only reason I kind of didn't put that on my to-do list to see was because the movie, the trailer just made it look like it was just like one of those cliche cop movies that we've seen a billion times. I haven't even seen the movie, but I know the cops are going to be involved in whatever is going on with who killed who, you know?
You know, I don't want to see it because I'm afraid it's going to be another City by the Sea. Remember that show?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It was horrible. I don't want to see that again. So I'm going to wait till I hear something good about it before I see it.
Agreed.
Wasn't James Franco in that movie, City by the Sea?
Yeah, he was.
He was.
Goodness gracious. I'm telling you, if not for Green Goblin Jr., then that guy doesn't, you know, he doesn't do anything for me.
Oh, Pineapple Express, man. Come on.
Well, that's true. I didn't see that, but I hear that this character is very dynamic that he plays.
He plays a great spot.
All right. So number four movie of the weekend. This will be great if we all saw this one. The Women, $10 million.
Wait, there's a movie that came out called The Women?
The Women.
It's one of those old lady kind of movies.
It's the first Wives Club part, what, 4, 5, 6?
I can guarantee you right here 11, and right now that I will not ever see that movie.
I tell you what, the cast is not bad though. Meg Ryan, Ava Mendez, Annette Bening. I mean, it's
Ava Mendez can.
For what it's worth, it is based. I mean, it is based on a 1939 movie, which was supposedly is a classic with Joan Crawford, Rosalind Russell, and obviously updated to fit our present day. I don't know. I don't want to say, well, they're just cashing on the success of Sex and the City, because.
That's
Sex
exactly
and the City just came out a couple months ago. Yeah, but the Sex and the City just came out a couple of months ago. It's not like they said, ooh, opening weekend, Sex and the City makes $60 million. Let's go out and make a movie called The Women and get it, you know, in pre-production, production, and then post by the time, you know, we hit the fall. We haven't even hit fall yet. So it's fair to say nobody saw The Women, and that most likely we're not going to be that open-minded about seeing it anyway. Right? Are we good on that?
Right.
Well, Women even didn't even go to see The Women, so.
Apparently not. $10 million.
Did.
Well, the problem is that women are still going to see Mamma Mia, which has a very impressive take at this point. Mamma Mia dropped down to number 12, but it's made $139 million, which is pretty. I mean. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And my wife already, you know, had me get her the soundtrack and all that. She's seen it and loved it. So that's the only review of that I can give. rounding out the top five, though, another female-driven movie, the House Bunny, starring Anna Faris. This is really sad.
That's the top five.
This top five. So, the sad thing is, Burn After Reading, Righteous Kill really appealed to this group. The only one of these movies that any of us saw was Burn After Reading, and so I guess we all need to repent and go to the movies this week. But that's your top five, as unimpressive. I mean, it's still better than last week, right? Bangkok Dangerous. By the way, Bangkok Dangerous dropped from number one all the way to number 8 Only made $2.4 million. That's really sad. That's almost a 70% drop from first weekend to second weekend. That's really bad. Wow. So, you know, tough luck for all the Bangkok Dangerous fans out there. Okay, so that's your top five. And here's a little feature we started last week since we liked it. I guess we'll do it again. This week in box office history. All right, people. 15 years ago, the year was 1993. What movie do you think was number one at the box office 15 years ago?
Oh, gosh.
1993. It's a big year.
Pulp Fiction?
That was 94, no. I think.
That was 94? Huh.
1990.
I'm going to say, you know, I don't think the month is right, but I'm just going to put Schindler's List out there.
Ooh.
Schindler's List.
No,
there's a sequel. There's a sequel for you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
It's been called Inglourious Bastards. That's the sequel.
Oh, wow. All right, I'll give you a hint. It was based on a television show, and is actually one of the movies that was a huge hit. That was based on a television show.
Based on a television show.
Spawn.
It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. It won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Nothing. We're going to go, of course, when we hear this?
Probably. I mean, it's a big movie. It's a major hit. One of the biggest movies of 1993.
Did this have a sequel?
It did have a sequel, although they like to say that it was not a sequel so much as kind of a spinoff. And I don't mean to confuse you, but that's what Warner Brothers said.
Fugitive?
There you go! The Fugitive! Excellent. Good job, Major.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah, when you said spin-off and but not a sequel, I was like, ah. Okay.
The Fugitive. That's right. No, The Fugitive had made $8 million over the weekend this week. 1993, on its way to making a total 144. Well, it had made $144 million, I believe, at that point. Here's the impressive thing, and I want to compare this with today. The Fugitive was number one movie in the country after it had been out for 6 full weeks. Okay,
wow.
We had in the top 10 that same weekend, Jurassic Park was still number 6. It had already made $319 million. It had been out for 14 weeks. Number 8 that weekend was In the Line of Fire. It had been out 10 weeks. Number 9 was Sleepless in Seattle. It had been out 12 weeks. So in the top 10, you had three movies that had been out 10 or more weeks. And the number one movie in the country was number one after its 6th week in release. Now let's go back to today, this weekend. In the top 10... you have one movie that's been out 9 weeks, and that, of course, is The Dark Knight. Everything else, you have the top 4 movies all debuted this weekend. The House Bunny, Tropic Thunder, they've been out 4 and 5 weeks. Bangkok Dangerous and Traitor, Death Race, 2, 3, 4 weeks. Nothing has been out. Yeah. And again, this just continues to prove what we see, is that movies are not about... let's make something that just pulls in viewers and attracts the long haul. They're about this media blitz, get as much as we can the first few weeks, and then that's it. We're done.
Well, you also got to figure, though, in the last 15 years, the movie industry has changed so dramatically with home entertainment nowadays.
A lot of people
have stopped going to movies because they can just watch the Blu-ray or a DVD at home for sometimes even better quality than they can see it in the theater.
I think our attention spans are a lot shorter, so we can only hold so many advertisements in our head at a time,
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's changed so much, and will be the topic of wonderful, wonderful papers and thesis and things of that nature. But nothing we're going to get into tonight.
All you college kids out there.
Exactly. That was the so that's the box office review in this week in history. And now I want to get into our little general information. This is where we throw out our favorite, the big stories of the week, or just anything that's kind of on our case that we want to talk about. First thing I'd like to do, though, earlier in the podcast we mentioned Tom Hanks in The Lady Killers, and it just got some of us here thinking. You're talking about the biggest and what many people feel the best actor in Hollywood, one of the all-time greats. The guy doesn't make bad movies, it seems, but we haven't seen him in anything. Well, we saw him in Charlie Wilson's War last year, but really it kind of seemed like his role in that was downplayed, even though he was the star of the movie. It seemed like the movie itself was bigger than his role in it. So let me lead you to ask the question, what's going on with Tom Hanks? Anybody want to talk about what he's doing right now?
He's currently doing Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons.
Yeah. Exactly. The, now, is that going to be a prequel or a
sequel? It's a book in the prequel, but I think the movies, they're making it a sequel.
That makes no sense.
That makes no sense.
That's what I heard, and I'm not even joking.
That's what I heard.
Bateman's got to say that one time in every podcast because, you know, that, of course, comes from Ghostbusters. It's a great line. Well, that's what I heard.
He's doing that with Ron Howard. He's also going to go back and reprise his role as Woody in Toy Story 3.
Yes.
Sweet.
He's awesome.
IMDb is saying that he's got another movie called Boone's Lick. That it is going to be happening after Angels and Demons.
Boone's Lick. If that's not a story about some small town with a population of like 60 and drama set like in the 1930s, then that title is terrible. Boone's Lick.
You want me to read you the plot summary that I found?
Sure.
Told with McMurdy's unique blend of historical fact and sheer storytelling genius, the novel follows the Cecil family's arduous journey by riverboat and wagon from Boone's Lick, Missouri, to Fort Phil Kearny in Wyoming. 15-year-old Jay narrates, describing the journey that begins with his ma, Mary Margaret, decides to hunt down her elusive husband, Dick, to tell him she's leaving him. Without knowing precisely where he is, they set out across the plains in search of him, encountering grizzly bears, stormy weather, and hostile Indians as they go. With them are Shay's siblings, GT, Neva, and baby Marcy, Shay's uncle, Seth, his grandpa, Krakenthrop, and Mary, Margaret's beautiful half-sister, Rose. During their journey, they pick up a barefooted priest named Father Villy and a snake Indian named Charlie 7 Days and persuade them to join in their travels.
Thank you for that, Venkman. That's excellent.
That just does not sound interesting at all.
But you know
those
what?
Those names alone, I don't know if not interesting. Those names alone, man. You know the thoughts that were running through my mind as you kept reading, like, Krakenthrop and McNugget Thorn, whatever the heck it was. not interesting. Days.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hanks is a busy guy. That's one thing I learned when I looked this up. He's got the great Buck Howard scheduled to be released this year. As a matter of fact, he is filming Angels and Demons with Ron Howard, and they seem to team up and create box office gold every time. Apollo 13,
yes.
And of course the first Da Vinci Code. Boone's Lick, as Venkman just gave us a nice little rundown. Toy Story 3 is definitely going to happen. But also remember, Tom Hanks is the head of Playtone, which is a production company. And I mean, right now they're in post production on Where the Wild Things Are, which is supposed to come out next year. Based on, of course, the classic children's book, so it should be awesome. But the guy, I mean, you know, he does so much. I mean, executive producer of Mamma Mia, again, a huge hit. He was executive producer of John Adams, the miniseries that was apparently very successful on HBO.
Very awesome movie, or TV series.
you know, Big Love, successful drama on HBO. He's a, you know, executive producer of that. The guy stays very busy. And again, if there's anybody that I'm so biased on, it's Tom Hanks. The guy, he nothing he does anymore seems to be an easy acting job or an easy box office hit. He takes hard, challenging roles. I mean, I guess you could say everybody thought The Da Vinci Code was going to make lots and lots of money because of the success of the book. But
yeah,
when you say that, I mean, the guy played five characters in The Polar Express, an animated movie, which was, you know, with the way they had him hooked up to those wires and doing all that stuff. I mean, he was very impressive in that. And you look at the character he played in The Terminal, Victor Navorsky from Krakoja, and you think, man, he's got like this Russian-sounding accent. This is crazy. I remember the first time we heard he was going to be in The Green Mile, and people said, look, Tom Hanks is going to be a prison guard on death row. That's not going to work. This is the guy from You've Got Mail. And the first time we heard he was going to be Saving Private Ryan, you know, just Tom Hanks in a war movie, that's not going to work. Yeah, I mean, every time he does something, even when he took a back seat, I mean, the guy's got all these Oscars and he's got all the success, and then he says, hey, you know what? I'm just going to play a smaller supporting role to Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can. And again, just absolutely impressive as Carl Hanratty. That was a great movie. Hanratty. That's good stuff. But again, it's have you noticed that every time we do a podcast, it seems like there's a name that keeps popping up? This week it seems to be Leonardo DiCaprio. It just keeps coming back. What was it a couple weeks ago? Keanu Reeves? Or was that last week? His name just kept coming.
It was a Man of Minds 1 week.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me, Mr. Black. I love talking about Amanda Bynes.
We
still haven't seen Sydney White, but I've got it on DVD. I got to watch it. Okay, so that's what's going on with Tom Hanks, best actor in Hollywood. Just a couple of things. We don't have to spend too much time on this, but Rambo 5 has been greenlit. And my initial reaction when I first read this was, uh-oh. And then it took me about 30 seconds to say, you know what? Rambo 4 was a great setup for a Rambo 5. I think Rambo 5 might actually be a better idea to be made than Rambo 4 was, if that makes any sense. You know, but what do you guys think? Is this just stupid?
No,
I never thought of it that way, but you're right. I can see it now being a great setup. But will it be a crazy action war adventure, or will it be Rambo trying to get back into life again? Which would be interesting as well. Rambo doesn't have to be killing people to be interesting to watch. He's just an interesting character.
Yes, he does. That's Rambo, man. I mean, I watched Rambo 4 here at my house, and I can't remember who I watched it with, but they made the comment afterwards like, oh, that's so unrealistic. Come on. I mean, Rambo, of course he's going to kill 300 guys with a 50 caliber machine gun with 200 rounds.
I have to disagree with whoever you were watching it with, because that was the most realistic bloody battle I think I've ever seen.
I mean, that's why I watch. I want to watch Rambo rip some guy's throat out of his neck with his bare hands. I don't want to watch Rambo get back into life and get a job at the grocery store. I mean,
yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say,
I do.
If the guy said he thought it was unrealistic, then probably what he means is that Rambo and a small group of people seem to be killing and overtaking so many, you know, of the bad guys. But here's the thing, without getting too, you know, collegiate and educational sounding or whatever, everybody has something embedded in them called a willing suspension of disbelief. This is actually a real thing. When you go to a movie, when you read a book, you have a contract in your mind, a deal that you're making with whatever it is you're watching. And that deal is, this is what I'm willing to accept. I'll give you a quick story. Watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in 1991 on video with my future father-in-law. This guy watches a movie about four mutant turtles who talk and do martial arts, and they fight with the help of their leader, who is a rat. Towards the end of the movie, Casey Jones, a human man, takes a golf club, swings it, and hits one of the bad guys, who then proceeds to fly about 15 feet before falling down. My future father-in-law says, there's no way that guy would fly that far just being hit with a golf club. And if you notice, this is, I mean, that's a perfect example. When you sit down to watch a superhero movie, you get it, okay? This guy is supposed to be able to do this. He's Superman, or he's Iron Man, or he's Batman. I buy into this. But as soon as we see John McClane or James Bond leap out of an airplane with no parachute at all, and then catch up to whatever bad guy in midair and use his parachute or whatever, then some of us think, okay, that's too we've gone too far, you know. Or maybe just the opposite. You say, well, I do expect that with James Bond. But if it was just, you know, some other guy in a movie, like, for instance, when I saw Triple X Vin Diesel do it, I thought, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. So, I mean, yeah, we have a belief, and with Rambo, you just expect him. You expect him to kill 80 or 90 guys by himself.
Not me.
What do you expect?
I expect him to go to a grocery store.
Bankman wants to see him cry. He wants to hear about his childhood.
He did. He cried in the first one. Remember?
Okay, okay, here we go. He's gonna go work in a coffee shop, okay? And these two guys are gonna come in, they're gonna be like, "Hey, Rambo." He's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "Dude, I know what you do, Rambo." He's like, "That's great. Dude, I just work in a coffee shop." They're like, "Sure, Rambo, we'll be back." And then they come back. And then they try to kill people, and then Rambo saves everybody.
And then they try to kill people, and then they,
And Rambo, Rambo goes on his journey to... Yeah.
You're on fire tonight, Dr. Binkman. That's amazing. I'll tell you what. What we'll do is, in the interest of time here, because we're getting close to an hour, some of these topics I certainly think we'll keep until next week. So I'll just put some of them to the side, and then we'll tease them for next week here at the end of the show. I'd like to move along and talk about what's the best thing you saw this week. I know one of the big things on television was Fringe debuted on Fox, and I'm sure some or all of you saw that.
Yes.
But let's talk about that. What was the best thing you saw on TV this week? Or the movies. Go ahead.
I caught up with something, which is Burn Notice. I caught up on the first season so I can start watching the second season, and the writing in it is really, really good. And it's got Bruce Campbell, and it's really great. I like the main actor in it, too, but it's really well written.
Jeffrey Donovan is the main actor, and it's also got Gabrielle Anwar, British actress.
Oh, yeah.
Really great show. Really well written.
You know,
Gabrielle Anwar. She was a co-star with me in a movie once. If you haven't seen that little Invasion of the Body Snatchers movie that she did back in 93. I was an extra in that movie, so we didn't get to talk too much. I don't hear from her anymore, but yeah, we were co-stars. It was me and her.
I thought you were going to get to help that. I thought you were going somewhere else with that co-stars and a film back.
No. Oh, no, I wish. I wish. If I was going to wish, it would be with somebody better than her.
I watched Fringe this weekend.
Was Fringe good?
You know, I liked it, but I didn't. I want to see more.
Wait a second. Know. I liked it, but I didn't. I want to see more.
I liked it.
You apparently liked it.
I like the idea. I like where the show is going. But I think they just crammed way too much in the first pilot episode. There's just, for me, it was just way too much crammed in there. Things were happening too fast. Like you were talking about, like, things being unbelievable, okay? I love Lost, and I have never had any complaints of Lost. But I watched Fringe, and everything just didn't, I was like, oh, that couldn't happen. I was like, they can't do that, because that doesn't make any sense. But here I am, I have no complaints like that with Lost, but with Fringe, I was like, those things just bugged me. That didn't make sense.
You know, on that topic, I saw Fringe as well. I liked Fringe. A lot of people didn't. I liked it. I like what they opened up and where it could go. actually read an interview with J.J. Abrams on that topic you were just talking about. You know, in the first episode, they opened up, they showed you exactly what they're getting into. They gave you the rules of what the series is going to be.
Yes.
So unbelievable, yes. But I mean, that's the premise to it. Fringe
that's
science.
Why,
I mean,
that's why I'm still in. I'm still in. They haven't lost me. I'm in for the show. I knew they were just setting up. It's, you know, just that setup was for me. Could have been executed a little bit better, I think. But
sure.
That's just,
it's no.
That's
it's
just
no
me.
Loss.
I mean, I'm
it's
gonna
no
watch
loss,
it.
But...
I'm gonna watch it this week. You know, I'm not going to watch it.
I'd probably say it's like. Oh.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mazur.
I thought it was a little more. It would pushed on the edge. It's, you know, obviously X-Files, you know, kind of in the same vein. But like, I think it pushed it out a little bit farther in some of the ideas and a little more wild with what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
So. Well, see, I got to decide if I'm going to go. I mean, I want to get on Fox.com and watch it, and I just don't know if I want to invest the time. So
see,
I don't know.
That's the thing, dude. It's like, this is another show that I have to make time to watch if I like it or not.
Well, yeah.
Joshua Jackson was surprisingly good.
Is he?
Joshua Jackson.
I say no. I say I have to say I wasn't sold on the character at all. I was out.
Dude, I have liked Joshua Jackson ever since Pacey from Dawson's Creek. And I'm not kidding either. Season one of Dawson's Creek sucked me in horribly, and I'll admit it to you. But
guilty
no, I'm on
pleasure.
Board. I like it.
See,
yes.
It all comes back to the guilty pleasure. That's
season
great.
One and two, Dawson's Creek, guilty pleasure.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to give an interesting little pick that I saw. I saw a movie this week called Even Money. Has anyone ever seen this film?
Even Money.
It's, the best way I can describe it, I don't know, it's almost like a poor man's Crash. It was set in Las Vegas. It had a multitude of celebrities in it. I would have to say it was a B movie, though, just because this is not a film that I saw advertised in theaters or, you know, that I ever heard of. But I mean, we're talking Forrest Whitaker, Tim Roth, Danny DeVito, Kim Basinger, Ray Liotta, what's his face that married Mariah Carey, the little dude from Drumline, Nick Cannon, he's in it. Jay Moore, who I think is, you know, pretty talented for a B movie actor. There was a lot. I mean, there was some pretty good semi star power. I mean, I know none of those guys are box office, you know, monsters, but I mean, Basinger and Whitaker, they've won Oscars. Tim Roth's been nominated. I mean, there was some. Oh, Kelsey Grammer was in it as well. Anyway, it was all about how Crash. I think the uniting factor in the movie Crash was race and racism. In this movie, it was gambling. Everybody's life was intertwined through either involved in gambling or involved in its promotion, meaning, you know, bookies and cops who were, you know, after bookies and things like that. It was one of those movies where the whole movie you see people and you know that everything's going down the tubes for most of them, and you just kind of sit back and watch, but you see how gambling was affecting these people. And then the movie didn't have a what you would call a happy ending, or at least not for everybody, but some people were able to make some changes and turn out okay. I thought this is the kind of movie that nobody's ever heard of, or most people haven't heard of, and it wasn't like an incredible film, but it was very good, very worth my hour and 45 minutes I spent watching it. So if you've never heard of that movie, you're interested, you know, it's not an action-packed movie by any means, but it's a nice little film.
Even Money?
Even Money, exactly. And the ending will not leave you. I mean, I'm not saying it's great, but it won't leave you feeling like, you know, there's closure. There really is closure. I'll say that's the best movie I saw this week.
Nice.
Anybody else want to tack on something? All right. Then I'll move along to any picks for the worst thing you saw this week.
I got worst, one for that.
Go ahead.
I don't know if any of you guys have seen this, but I don't know if you guys know I'm a huge fan of vampires and all those kind of creepy things that crawl in the night. So I caught the new HBO series True Blood.
Oh yeah,
I've heard of that.
What a pile of crap that show is.
That was awful.
And we have Anna Paquin, who's not a terrible actress. She did win an Academy Award.
Yeah, Oscar winner.
But this show is just bad. I mean, it's like... it goes back to one of my favorite catchphrases, that somebody actually funded this. And I'm surprised at that.
There was a meeting involved and everything. And people said, this would be a good idea.
Somebody, it went through the process enough to... Somebody said, I'm going to invest money in this.
It was it the acting? I mean, was it the bad writing? The acting? What was bad?
It was all of that. I mean, the acting was horrible. The writing was just horribly bad. And it was... The whole thing was kind of like... My feeling of it is that they're trying to market the whole... They're trying to get on the Twilight bandwagon.
Yeah, the vampire bandwagon.
Yeah, but it's like... But it's like a pornographic Twilight, in a way.
Let me ask you this. Was it better or worse than John from Cincinnati that was also on HBO?
I actually never saw that.
Oh, okay.
To be honest, I can't comment on that, but I see that show.
Because that show was canceled after one season, and we can only hope True Blood gets canceled as well.
if it makes a season, I'll be surprised. It's just
mid-season cancel.
It's really
mid-season cancel. They probably won't do that since they have too much money invested in it.
Probably, yeah.
I tell you what, the worst thing I saw this week, and I was devastated, and I only made it through about half. I'm a big Saturday Night Live fan, and they had the season premiere. Michael Phelps, you know, Olympic monster Michael Phelps, hosted the season premiere of Saturday Night Live. And I thought, we just finished the two big conventions for the Republican and Democratic parties. We've had a whole summer stories they could have tapped in from. And with the exception of the opening, which I thought was good, and I thought Tina Fey, as a guest star, she does a dead-on impression of Sarah Palin.
It was pretty funny.
And of course, you know, Amy Poehler doing Hillary Clinton. It's not that the impressions are good or even accurate. It's just that over the course of a couple of years, you get accustomed to seeing them do the characters, and they kind of make it their own. And so Amy Poehler doing Hillary Clinton was very funny, with this bitter sarcasm that she spoke with about not winning the nomination. And I mean, it was very funny. But after that, the show, it was just terrible.
Oh my gosh, it was awful. I totally agree. I actually just got finished watching it, and it was awful.
Now, I will say this. Kristen Wiig, who is on Saturday Night Live now, if you guys don't watch her, don't know her name or whatever, I think Kristen Wiig's the funniest actress that I've seen in a long time. I mean, definitely on Saturday Night Live right now, if you tell me who the funniest women in Saturday Night Live history, I'm going to say Kristen Wiig and Sherry O'Terry are two very, very funny women. But Sherry O'Terry always had help from Will Ferrell. Almost always had help from Will Ferrell, and that's pretty good help. And so right now, Kristen Wiig, even though she's only been a featured player for a couple of years, she is so funny, and many of her memorable characters on the show are solo characters. It's not like she's teamed up with Andy Samberg or Jason Sudeikis on everything she does. I was really disappointed, because the season premiere should be so much better than what it was. But that was the worst thing I saw this week. Anybody else have something for the worst thing they saw?
Yeah, I saw a movie, a little horror movie this week called Shudder.
Yeah.
Starring Joshua Jackson.
I hear he's a pretty good actor.
No, he was terrible. Dude, it was awful. I wrote a very bad review on it.
Yeah, I noticed the headline of that review.
It was terrible. It didn't sell me on Joshua Jackson acting ability at all.
Well, I saw that it came out on DVD. The truth is, I actually was going to rent it and then decided not to. So I guess I'm glad. But isn't this another horror movie based on a Japanese?
Yeah, it's even one of those movies where, you know, the Americans move to Japan. They have to move to Japan because that's where the horror happens. If they didn't move to Japan, the horror wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't, you know, It wouldn't have had that Japanese mystique.
They're just reaching these days, aren't they? They're just reaching for stuff.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. But I will say one thing. This is one of the a good thing I saw this week, and I don't know if anyone else has seen it, but the preview for Clint Eastwood's movie Changeling came out this week.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that trailer or not, but that movie looks absolutely amazing, and I can't wait to see that. I think Clint Eastwood has another movie that's going to be nominated for some awards.
Doesn't it blow your mind that, I mean, this guy that did Every Which Way But Loose with a chimp and some of the just the dirty, hairy stuff that he did and now is evolving into, you could argue that he's one of the best directors.
Yeah.
You take Flight of Our Fathers.
Right before he went and got big again, he did a movie called Bloodwork. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
That movie was awful. And when I saw that, I'm like, Eastwood is dead. His career is gone. This is the last thing we'll probably ever see of him. It was just terrible. And then he goes on to make these amazing films.
Yeah. I mean, Unforgiven was awesome. But I thought, Unforgiven, that's his. That's Western. Okay, maybe he got a fluke with that.
Exactly. But then
Million Dollar Baby and Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima. Did he do Gone Baby Gone?
Yeah. No. Okay. He didn't do Gone. He did Mystic River.
But he did that freaking out. Now, in all honesty, with all due respect, I thought Mystic River was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It left a bad feeling in my gut when I saw it. I liked the movie. The acting was great. The story was great, but it was the subject matter that like killed it for me. It literally left an aching feeling inside of me. After I watched that movie.
That's what you want when you go to see a movie. That's exactly
what you want. Yeah, if it's moving you, it's doing its job.
I couldn't sleep. I lost sleep after I saw that movie because my mind, I was just thinking about what had happened in that film and I couldn't get it out of my head. That's how much that movie affected me and I did not like that feeling.
Well, bless your heart, Venkman. It's all better now. No problem. But Clint, back to what you mentioned, Changeling. I mean, Clint Eastwood, it just seems like when he makes a movie now, you better look out. He doesn't make anything that's not an event anymore. So
yeah,
be interesting to see what he does this time. Okay. Well, last thing I wanted to really quickly talk about was what's coming out this week and. Anything that our panel thinks you should be on the lookout for, either on television, DVD, or at the box office. And so while you guys think about that for a second, what you want to recommend to people, I'll go ahead and let you know. At the big screen this week, we have, here's another good one, Lakeview Terrace. Now, in all honesty, the movie doesn't look horrible, but golly, I'm so sick of, here's the bad guy, here's the good guys. The bad guy is going to terrorize the good guy for roughly an hour and 40 minutes. And then the good guy is going to get in a fight with the bad guy, and eventually the good guy is going to win. If you've seen The Crush with Alicia Silverstone, if you've seen Fear with Mark Wahlberg, if you've seen Cape Fear with De Niro, which, by the way, I think is the only movie of this kind that I ever actually thought was very good, there's always, it's a very boring plot. You remember Unlawful Entry with Kurt Russell and Ray Liotta from back in the mid-90s. I mean, it's a common plot. So, I don't know. Is anybody going to go see Lakeview Terrace?
You know, I'm either going to catch that or I'm going to catch Ghost Town with Ricky Gervais.
Ghost Town looks pretty funny.
Yeah, it does. It does look
Although
funny.
There's a lot of bad movies that have been made about people that see dead people.
That's so, what I'm scared.
So I'm a little worried about that. What was that Mark Ruffalo, Reese Witherspoon movie a couple years ago? with Napoleon Dynamite in it, where you know she was in a coma.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
He sees her.
Yeah, that thing.
Golly, what was that one with Robert Downey Jr. and Elizabeth Shue? Heart and Souls, or something like that.
Gosh.
And then Bob Hoskins and Denzel Washington did one several years ago where Denzel dies and Bob Hoskins is seeing him. Oh, golly. It just seems like there's always a movie where somebody's seeing dead people. And when it's a suspenseful movie, it's got
potential. Then there was that movie called The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, I heard of that. That actually turned out to be kind of decent. But I'm all about this Ricky Gervais. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's very funny. And he said in an interview that this movie is the best. When he read the script, he said it was the best script he's read in the last 5 years, whatever that means. So,
I believe that. Of all the scripts he's read in the last 5 years, that was the best.
He did the movie, right?
he made it, right? It is the best script, and I wrote it, and it's the best. Oh, man. Okay, My Best Friend's Girl's coming out with Kate Hudson, Dane Cook, Jason Biggs. Jason Biggs, by the way, I think he's underrated, and maybe he's underrated because he doesn't do really good stuff. I mean, he's done some bad movies since American Pie.
Terrible movies. American Pie, best movie he's done.
Definitely the best movie he's done, but he did that Woody Allen movie once with Christina Ricci, and
that was awful, too. I did not like that.
See, I thought that was a great movie. I thought that was hilarious. But he does some bad stuff, but I think he's talented. I remember a couple years back he did The Graduate on Broadway, and he played the Dustin Hoffman role, Benjamin. And that was supposed to be pretty successful. So, I don't know.
Dane Cook did come out about this movie and said he didn't like it.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. We've got direct.
Man, everyone's bagging their own films.
I know.
I think it's the end thing to do. Tom Hanks needs to come out and say, yeah, I'm doing this movie called Boone's Lick. It really sucks.
It sucks. Go see it, but it sucks.
Exactly. Julianne Moore, Mark Ruffalo, The Blindness. I've been seeing this trailer a lot in the last several months. Apparently, everybody starts to become blind. Kind of like happening when everybody becomes dead.
Yeah.
Looks like it's going to be good, just draining.
Yeah, you're right. It's a movie that looks like it's got potential, but it's just going to suck the life right out of you.
I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued by this. I saw the trailer, and I thought it actually didn't look as bad as, like, The Happening or anything like that. So.
Oh, yeah, it looks way better.
It actually looks kind of good. It might be good. But we'll see.
Yeah. I was excited to see The Happening, though, so, I mean...
Did you like it, though?
Did I like that? Are you freaking crazy? The Happening was horrible. That's all I have to say about that. The Happening was just depressing. I was half expecting for Bob Saget or someone to come out with a... I don't know. It was ridiculous. I thought it was a joke.
I was really excited for where you were going with the Bob Saget reference on the podcast, but kind of died right there. But at least I watched
the roast, so he was just kind of the first name that came to mind.
Oh man! Also, The Duchess in limited release coming out with Keira Knightley, Appaloosa, which could be interesting. Ed Harris.
Oh yeah, that's the first one I want to see.
First movie he's directed since Pollock, and looks like a Western, the modern day Western. They can be good. Ed Harris is joined by Viggo Mortensen. They haven't teamed up since what was that little movie called, History of Violence?
So that
looks interesting. Also,
that was the movie I was referring to when I was doing Rambo 5, by the way, if you didn't catch that.
And you said what? The coffee shop
thing? Yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah, got it, Bankman.
We moved on.
That was like 30 minutes ago.
Oh man, yeah, that was.
I'm excited to see Appaloosa though. That's one that's on the top of my list to see this next week. So,
I'm excited for Smallville.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Man, that looks really exciting. I can't wait. I mean, there's huge cast changes. There's going to be new stuff. But, like, you want to see what the hell happened at the Fortress of Solitude.
Dude, honestly, bro, this is the one thing I'm scared of. They're not going to show it. It's gonna cut to like, it's gonna cut to like 1 year later.
Oh.
And they're only gonna talk about it. That's what I think's gonna happen. That's how I think they're gonna start it out, which sucks. And I'm not excited for that. But I'm excited for Smallville to start again. But I think we're just gonna miss a whole chunk of the story that's just gonna be talked about. That's what I think is gonna happen. I don't know if it will, but that's what I'm thinking.
Well, Smallville does premiere this week. What is this, like the seventh season, something like that?
Eighth.
I don't know. As I've mentioned before, I'm not a big Smallville fan, but I know that it definitely has a following and is an interesting story. So that previews or premieres this week. Also premiering is House. Does anybody watch House?
I watch it occasionally. It's not one that I follow religiously, but it's one that you don't really have to. It's like the story. From what I've seen, each episode is a story that stands on its own, kind of. I don't know. I catch it every once in a while. I like it, but for me, I don't follow it.
Sometimes I get the feeling that House is the best movie that I'm not watching, or the best TV show that I'm not watching. I don't know. That's just
everyone talks about it, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's brilliant. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good."
I've seen a couple of episodes, and it's not enough to like hook me. It's a good show, but
yeah, I think it has hooked me.
It's solid. It's just not like it pulls you in and goes, you know, I want to live in this world for a while.
Yeah,
gotcha. I'm with you there.
And the guy's just too much of a jerk to want to be around him.
Okay, well, I think those are the two big ones that are coming out this week. I think we're really going to get rolling next week when The Office debuts. That, of course, September 25th. And to me, that's I'm so excited. I don't want to talk about it because we're clearly over time tonight. But next week we'll talk more about The Office. We'll talk about Heroes. I'll give Dr. Venkman the chance to convince me that I need to be watching that show this season, because after last season, I've pretty much given up on Heroes. It's too busy, too much going on.
No.
So
no.
That's just me.
Bandwagon.
Jump on now.
Buckle up. Let's go. Let's go for a ride.
Buckle up. Well, then you guys get ready. That'll be a big topic of discussion next week. We'll discuss Heroes and of course, same stuff we always talk about, and then we'll sprinkle in some new things. So does anybody have any parting shots they want to give? That's excellent.
Parting shots?
It's a parting shot. It's when we're about to part from our audience. We're about to part from each other, and you give a little, you know, parting shot. I just want to say, hey. Okay, so do you have anything you want to say?
Yeah, I do, actually. I'm not excited for this G.I. Joe movie coming out.
Okay.
Me neither.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate, or do you want to get into that more next week?
I'll get into it more next week. Just know that I'm not too happy about what Steven Summers has done to this franchise.
It's a franchise already? I haven't even made a movie yet.
No, but it was a cartoon, a toy line, is all that stuff. It's a franchise before
it was a cereal.
Cereal.
Yeah.
It was a doll. Don't forget it was a doll.
It was a board game.
It was an action figure.
It was a video game.
Boys play with action figures.
Hey,
well, that's fair. Hey, yes.
EMA. You stop that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
You could go a step further. It's a historical figure.
You stop making fun of people that collect action figures.
I am sorry. Kind of. Not really. No, I've got action figures. I don't even want to talk about the things I've got, but I've got some stuff, and I'm not going to criticize anybody for collecting action figures.
All right.
Anyway, yeah. Okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Did you have something you wanted to say there? I heard the dude's voice.
I just kind of want to hear I want to hear Venkman's strongly worded letter that he's going to write to the G.I. Joe people on next week.
Yeah. Exactly. Actually, I'm sorry,
just,
but it's a
just
fact.
Just CC me on it. CC me on it, and I'll go over it, and we'll talk.
Sounds good.
Hilarious. Sweet.
All right, so next week we're going to talk about G.I. Joe. We'll talk about who we think maybe should play the Riddler in the next Batman movie. Also, I don't know, we'll talk about Heroes, we'll talk about The Office, and anything else that we think you would enjoy. So let's see, for all of us here, we got the Dude, we got Mazer, we got Mr. Black, we got Dr. Venkman, and myself, EMH. So long, everybody. Say goodnight, guys.
Good night, everybody. Bye.